Prisons are intended to offer safety and security, serving as fortresses against societal threats. Their towering walls, sophisticated security measures, and diligent staff create an environment meant to ensure order and protection. Yet the actual experience frequently unveils a nuanced reality, where the interplay between security protocols and human dynamics presents a delicate balance, sometimes tipping toward uncertainty. In other words, prisons are only as strong as their weakest link. Humans. I'm Laura. I'm here with my best friend Marina, and this is Grimm.
Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
I was just telling you that I just started watching a prison show on Netflix, so I'm in a prison mindset.
State of mind?
I was just gonna say that, which is sort of like a New York state of mind, but there's more feces involved.
Is there?
No. Probably equal amounts of feces.
Yeah.
Anywho.
Anyway, speaking of Patreons, just kidding. We're a little off the rails today.
What is it called, punch drunk? When you're just like when you're just like goofy and tired.
Yeah,
and
that's us. It's only Monday.
It only took us about 20 minutes to start this recording. Mm-hmm. We were just cracking each other up and
we're just so funny.
Anyways.
Okay.
Oh, we're like three seconds in and we've said anyways three times. So good for us.
Take care of your livers, friends. All right. So let's start with our Patreon shout outs.
Whoop, whoop.
Woo woo! At least we have a lot of energy for that.
And we do.
My voice is back.
Your higher octave is back.
No, I can't. No, okay. You can't. All right. Starting off with Eric K.
Eric K.
We love you. Brandy D.
Brandy D.
We love you, Brandy.
Thank you so much.
Woo. Kate Y.
We love you. We love you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Autumn B.
Autumn B.
Autumn, we love you.
We love you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Alicia A.
Alicia A. We love you.
We love you.
Thank you so much.
Mia B.
Mia B.
We love you.
Just so you guys know, I'm just going to paint a word picture. Laura like squiggles her head back and forth like a bobblehead whenever she does it.
And you forgot the shoulder. Who is it? Shaq. The shoulder.
Oh, yeah. Like the little cat that's about to take off.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Look on my butt.
Yeah.
Okay. And on that note, Emma Rose H.
Emma Rose H.
We love you. Seriously, always. Thank you.
Thank you.
We love you.
We love you.
Make our days
so much.
All the time. Okay. It's going to be bad.
There's nobody listening anymore anyway. So everybody has stopped.
All gone. Okay, let's get into it. So in addition to a plethora of articles and other sources on the internet, I got a lot of my information for this case from the book Manhunt, The Search for Vicky and Casey White by Rick Singleton. I'm so excited to tell you this case.
Okay, I'm ready.
I literally wrote buckle up for a wild ride.
Oh boy.
So
how
that's your buckle. That was a shotgun. I guess you don't buckle and unbuckle. It's just
click.
That's far less
and
interesting.
Whoosh, the pendulum swings.
I'm really good at sound effects.
Okay, yes. Well, I'm not going to buckle myself up with a shotgun, but go ahead and take me on this ride.
All right. Casey Cole White was born on August 20th, 1983. I don't actually know much about his childhood, but he grew up to be a big man at 6'9" and 260 pounds.
Holy shit. 6'9"?
Yep. 6'9".
That damn, is she right. Fine. That's what I heard myself say, but I think I said 6'9".
Okay.
That's huge.
It is. And I said he's looking like trouble with salt and pepper hair, hazel eyes, all sounds great so far, and a lot of tattoos. Sounds great, except that many of them are racist tattoos. So,
Yep. How old was he?
At what point in life?
When he had salt and pepper hair?
Like mid 30s.
Okay.
Yeah. In 2003, when he was just 19, not sure of his hair color, he was involved in a vehicle pursuit in Giles County, Tennessee. He was convicted and served 31 days in the Giles County Jail. Following that stint, he was charged with all sorts of things over the years, including criminal mischief, harassment, and public intoxication. Mm-hmm. Happens to the best of us.
Sure.
He was also charged several times for domestic violence, including in 2006 as a result of assaulting his mother, and in 2010 as a result of assaulting his stepbrother with an axe, landing him in jail for 6 years.
Okay, yeah. That's quite a domestic assault.
Yeah, yes. But in 2015, these crimes would seem like child's play.
Oh, no.
Connie Jane Ridgway was born on July 4th, 1956, in Athens, Alabama. She had two sons, Austin and Cameron. According to Austin, she was a never-met-a-stranger kind of person. In her community, she was just really loved and appreciated. Everyone knew her as a sweet, kind, smiling, happy kind of person.
Did she light up a room?
She did. She did. At Meadowlands Apartments, where she lived, many of her neighbors were elderly or on fixed incomes. Some didn't have cars, so she'd give them rides to the grocery store or the doctor's office or even to Huntsville or Birmingham. A devout Southern Baptist, she was also into crafting and fashioned angels out of white felt to pass out to friends, family members, and fellow congregants of Clemens Baptist Church.
Oh, that's so sweet.
She was big on celebrating birthdays, saving as much as she could from her small income to get special things for her boys. This continued even as they grew older. Connie loved visiting Atlanta for Austin's birthday and Atlanta Braves games. One year, she visited despite having a broken toe. She was doubtless in pain as they walked into Turner Field, Austin recalled, but a chance to be with her sons was too important to pass up.
Which toe? Yeah. It would matter.
They didn't say.
Damn.
What is it, the pinky toe that's the hardest? Because isn't your pinky toe for like your balance?
I think pinky toe or your big toe.
Yeah, big toe is just like percentage wise, so, you know, bound
it's like
to hurt 50% more.
50% of your foot.
Yeah, you have a weird feet. That is a really big toe. Connie used to make him Mississippi mud cakes. You're just thinking about how big 50% of your foot is.
Yes, okay.
As a toe size.
Mississippi mud cakes. I'm listening.
They're his favorite. She made it just as he liked. No nuts, just marshmallow and chocolate icing on top. Mm. And I did say, in short, you might say she lit up a room.
Mm.
In 2015, Connie was 59 and the boys were in their 20s. Connie was struggling financially. Her second husband had died in 2003 with no life insurance. This is not an insurance play whatsoever. Okay. There was no life insurance involved. She wanted to see Austin for his birthday, but the distance was a problem. Austin asked his brother to send her gas money, and to ease the burden, they met halfway at a pizza joint near Birmingham. It was the month after Cameron's wedding, his brother, and there was a newlywed vibe to the occasion. Much of the conversation revolved around Cameron and his new wife. After pizza, they went to a park, then said their goodbyes, certain they would see each other again soon.
But they were wrong. Didn't, yes. Yep.
Police were called at 5 p.m. that Friday, October 27th, to do a welfare check after a call from a neighbor. When they arrived at the apartment, her door was open. Connie had been violently stabbed to death in an apparent robbery gone wrong. She was pronounced dead at the scene. Her body was taken to the Alabama Department of Forensic Sciences lab in Huntsville. Although local law enforcement had been first to arrive on the scene, the Rogersville chief of police had called in the State Bureau of Investigation to lead the investigation. The state took over, but just a few weeks later, the lead investigator left for the Middle East on a one-year deployment with the National Guard, and progress on the case skidded to a halt. This ate at Sheriff Rick Singleton of the Lauderdale County Sheriff's Office, and he decided that they were going to help on the case.
That's the guy who wrote the book?
Huh. You may recognize Rick's name was my next sentence. Correct. Check.
Because I was just thinking, was there another case with like a Singletary? And then I was like, no,
there was actually, though. Singletary's rat poison with Velma.
Oh,
so.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But then, this one really rung a bell for me.
Yep. You got your bell rung. Yes. Rick is the author of the book I read, and he seems like just a super stand-up guy with an impressive resume. Rick began his law enforcement career as a reserve deputy with the Lauderdale County Sheriff's Office in 1972. He was later hired as a corrections officer with the office, and in February 1973 was sworn in as a deputy sheriff. In 1978, he ran unsuccessfully for the office of the sheriff at the age of 26, but that made him the youngest candidate to seek the office in the history of the county. And it's funny because they talk about counties so much, and I just think, I don't know, we don't really...
I mean, we don't talk about counties in the same way we talk about towns, but those states are a lot bigger. So like, I feel like their county is like the size of our state. That's not a fact. I'm just saying.
The states are a lot bigger, but also counties really matter where you're voting in sheriffs and prosecutors and judges. Oh. And yeah. So they really pay attention to those, counties and that's divisions.
Helpful information. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, after the election, he continued his career with the Florence, Alabama Police Department, where he quickly rose through the ranks, being appointed chief of police in 1996. He retired as chief in 2012 after serving more than 32 years with the department, but he wasn't done serving his community. He ran for sheriff again in 2014, this time winning both the primary and the general election by an overwhelming margin, and he ran for the second term unopposed, the first candidate for the office of sheriff ever to do so.
Gotta get that double pension. Super
awesome. Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. That's about a bonus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He earned it, I would say.
Yeah.
Okay, now again, we're in 2015, so he's the sheriff here. Rick had Lieutenant Brad Potts contact the state investigator to get the latest updates on Connie's case. They were hesitant to work with him, and months turned into years with no progress. It seemed like Casey had gotten away with it, but he couldn't leave well enough alone. On December 1st, 2015, Casey broke into a house and stole two firearms. Later that evening, he arrived at his ex-girlfriend's house, where he held her and her two roommates hostage. All three adults were able to escape, with Casey shooting at them as they fled.
Oh my gosh.
In a particularly cruel move, Casey shot and killed their dog.
Oh.
Which just like, what the fuck?
Fuck you, Casey. Yeah,
like, what? Why?
Tell me the difference in time between when he murdered
Connie
to now.
It was 2015. It was just October to December.
Oh, so it's only 2 months.
Yeah.
Okay. I felt like the case went cold.
That's because I said months turned into years, which is still true, but you'll see why. So, okay. Yeah, I confused you. That's why.
You did. Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to make sure I understood the timeline.
I'm glad you said that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also you said that investigator left and I was like, that'd be a mm-hmm. really quick turnaround. He's like, I'm going to be the lead investigator. Just kidding. I'm leaving tomorrow. Goodbye.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, there's like that timeline. And then we went back into Casey's timeline.
Okay.
So that was very confusing. Sorry. Okay. But I'm glad you asked so that people can follow along. So this was only what, 3 months later?
Right. Yep. Two.
Okay. Enough with the math. It's just that, you know, I was thinking October, which is 10, not 9. Okay. Moving on. Her kids, his ex-girlfriend's kids, were home but unharmed. And I don't know their ages. Okay. So I assume maybe older. Mm-hmm. I hope. That'd be pretty shitty.
Yeah.
If you were just, I mean, that whatever. I'm not in the scenario, so I don't know. I don't know.
I think you can leave like 12-year-olds home alone.
But what about during an active shooting?
I don't know. I don't
know. It seems like it would be a lot older. You would need to be a lot. Maybe it's 18. Okay. Moving on. Then he broke into another home and stole a car, driving it to a rest stop where he attempted to hijack a tractor trailer. You know, I'm not sure that wasn't really a good... he wasn't successful because the man was able to drive off well again in case he opened fire. But I just feel like even if he had gotten in, do you think that he knew how to drive it?
No, unless he has a CDL that we don't know about.
Right. Yeah, he doesn't seem one to follow many rules, so no. Probably not. So at this point, Casey's frantic and still looking for a getaway car, so he attempted to hijack another vehicle. He shot a woman in the arm in an attempt to get in the driver's seat, but she somehow survived and got away, with Casey unable to take control of the vehicle. Finally, he attempted to hijack a third vehicle, this time able to get in. By this time, police were on the scene, and Casey shot at them, bad move, while driving away. He led officers on a dramatic 100-mile-an-hour pursuit until he was finally stopped several counties away. During a tense standoff, he demanded to talk to the sheriff and threatened to shoot himself in the head. He ultimately asked for a pack of cigarettes and a Sundrop soda before surrendering.
A Sundrop? Is that like Mountain Dew?
It seems like it would be a Sprite or something. Yeah, oh, okay. Sundrop. Maybe more like Mountain Dew. I'm not sure if it was caffeinated or not.
Did you Google it?
I didn't. I Googled a lot of things. There were a lot of map looking in this case.
I'm a map.
But I didn't. Now someone will tell us and we can look.
I'm disappointed.
Yeah, you're going to look it up.
I'm going to look. Okay. I need to know.
All right.
Okay. You know what it looks like? It says it's a citrus flavored soft drink, but what is that? What was
Fresca?
No. It's not Fandango. That's a movie theater. Fanta? What's the one that starts with? No. Fago? No. What was the green one? You're
not thinking of Fresca?
What was the green and red soda? Citrus? No? Citrus? No?
Surge?
Surge! That's what it is!
Oh. Yes. Ooh. Surge would definitely make me stop a standoff.
It looks like Surge, right?
I guess. I don't remember what Surge looks like.
Oh, yeah. It's got that same green color with the red.
That's nothing. Sun Drop's not red.
It was green with like a red logo.
Okay. Y'all are going to have to Google this yourself and weigh in. But the letter is red and the background's yellow. It's like the exact opposite with Surge.
Okay. And then a serious question. What's going on with your accent tonight?
You're like, y'all. Okay. No. This one's serious because I'm trying really hard to stop saying you guys because people are sensitive about that at work. Because, you know, guys, for us in the Northeast, guys is ubiquitous. We say it. It means everybody. But apparently, it's not everybody. And so I'm trying to say y'all.
Is you all okay?
Yeah, because y'all? It doesn't imply anything. You guys is exclusive. Listen, I work in corporate America, okay? I'm trying.
Okay.
I'm trying.
That's all we can ask is that you try.
And as a result, you get y'all. Alabama and y'all.
With your friends.
Okay. Anyways. Casey sat in jail for 3 years, awaiting trial until he was finally convicted of 9 felony charges, including attempted murder, kidnapping, robbery, burglary. I was stressed about saying that. Mm-hmm. I can't say that word. Cruelty to animals. Thank you. And breaking and entering a vehicle. And that's how we've kind of fast forwarded now in the timelines. In March 2016, that math does not work, huh? 2015 to 2016 is not 3 years.
It's not.
Okay. Ignore the 3 years. So my issue with this is as much as I respect Sheriff Singleton for writing the book and putting this all together, and he provided a ton of information, it was a little bit hard to follow. It jumped around. Maybe more than a little.
Okay.
And then trying to align that with all of the articles I read and things I found online, there's a little bit of conflicting timelines. I did my very best, but when the math isn't mathing, please leave me alone.
It's not mathing here. I mean,
it doesn't really matter.
Okay.
He was in jail. He did some bad things. I'm going to tell you about the bad things. The in-between at this point doesn't really matter. Okay. So
we won't focus.
Of some year.
Yeah. Okay. There you go.
In some year in this century, he was sentenced to 75 years in prison for 7 of the 9 counts, including attempted murder and robbery, and put in William Donaldson Correctional Facility, locally referred to just as Donaldson. They still didn't know he was responsible for Connie's murder, but for some unknown reason, in June 2020, I'm pretty sure it was 2020.
Okay.
He sent a letter to the Lauderdale County Sheriff's Office confessing to killing Connie in cold blood.
Is that the three? Well, that wouldn't be 3 years either.
I know. I'm not sure.
It doesn't matter.
No, it was 75 years he was sentenced to. So
he had some time.
Mm-hmm. So Casey was subsequently brought to Lauderdale County Detention Center, or LCDC, not quite as cool as ACDC, but close, to talk to detectives. There, he claimed he was hired to kill Connie. Evidently, now you've just heard the background on Connie. That seems outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
Evidently, she was scheduled to be a witness for the prosecution in another case in Lauderdale County a few weeks after her death. So it seemed like maybe there could have been motive for someone to have her killed, but Casey never gave a name and there was no other evidence to substantiate his claim. So we're not sure if that's the truth.
Yeah, we're not buying that.
And according to Casey's mother, he confessed only so that he'd be transferred to a different prison since he didn't like Donaldson.
Mm.
And that's also possible.
Yeah.
Casey was finally charged on August 3rd, 2020, with 2 counts of capital murder for Connie, specifically capital murder during a first-degree burglary and murder for pecuniary, I had to Google how to pronounce that one, gain, since he was paid to commit the murder, which is confusing to me because
they don't believe him.
Exactly. So I'm unsure about that, but I'm pretty sure those wouldn't have been fabricated. That must have been true.
Right.
So unclear. A lot of missing information for me here.
Okay.
At this point, he was moved to LCDC for meetings with his lawyer and appearances before the judge and was planned to return to Donaldson after his last scheduled hearing on November 4th of that year. However, the day before this hearing, officers received word that Casey was planning an escape. He intended to take a corrections deputy hostage using a shank, and when they searched his cell, they did find 2 shanks. The judge had him immediately transported back to Donaldson. But there was a problem. Casey's court-appointed lawyer was not allowed to bring equipment that he needed to prepare for Casey's defense into the prison due to its maximum security classification. So the lawyer appealed to the court to have Casey brought back to Lauderdale. The request was granted, and Casey was moved back to LCDC on March 5th, 2021. I promise this is all relevant. After his lawyer prepared him for trial, Casey entered a plea of not guilty to the charge of murder, and a trial date was set for June 2022. He was then returned to Donaldson in August 2021. You don't have to memorize the dates.
Okay.
But it's relevant that he's back and forth.
Okay.
On February 25th, 2022, Casey was returned yet again to LCDC for pre-trial motions that were scheduled for court proceedings leading up to the trial. Friday, April 29th, 2022, so he's at LCDC at this point, mm-hmm. began as a typical day. Just before 9 a.m., two vanloads of inmates, each with two transport deputies, departed for the courthouse, leaving behind a skeleton crew. The detention center was woefully understaffed. Of the 42 needed deputy positions, 11 of them were open.
Yikes.
Mm-hmm. I can't do that percentage, but it's pretty, it's a lot. It's maybe as big as your big toe.
It's like 25%, right?
Yeah.
Approximately mm-hmm. a yeah. quarter.
Yeah. So maybe like my big toe. Okay. At 9:20 a.m., Assistant Director Vicky White, no relation to Casey, instructed a corrections deputy to prepare Casey for transport to the courthouse for a mental health evaluation. She told the deputy that since she was the only deputy who was firearm certified, she would be dropping him off by herself. This should have been concerning, not only because it was against jail policy to transport an inmate by oneself, but also because of Casey's previous attempts to escape.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, Vicky stood at just 5'5 and 160 pounds compared to Casey, who was 6'9 and 260 pounds.
Did he actually try to escape previously, or there were just rumors that he was going to?
There were just rumors that he was going to, and they found the shanks to validate okay. that All part. Right.
Yep. Gotcha.
But Vicky was second in command and experienced, and the corrections deputy was new, so he didn't question her. Casey was handcuffed and placed in leg shackles and put in the booking room. Vicky told the corrections deputy that after she dropped Casey off at the courthouse, she was going to go to the walk-in or urgent care since she wasn't feeling well. At 9:41 a.m., Vicky led Casey to her patrol car and left. At 10:18 a.m., the director of corrections texted Vicky to ask her to meet him in his office to discuss some paperwork. She didn't respond, but he figured she was still in court, so he sent another text at 10:48. Shortly after that, the corrections deputy told him that Vicky had intended to go to the walk-in, so he texted her a third time just to say he hoped she felt better. By this time, deputies noticed that Casey hadn't returned from court with the other inmates. They began asking around, including calling the courthouse and trying Vicky's phone. It went straight to voicemail.
Okay, I feel like somebody should have checked in earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, but again, it was skeleton crew. They thought she was at court, that she had brought him to the courthouse, and mm-hmm. then she wasn't back, and they weren't really thinking anything of it because they knew she was going to go to the walk-in.
I think I've watched too many movies.
Yeah. I mean, your point is still valid that maybe someone should have checked in.
Like, don't they have radios and stuff?
I guess. I'm sure they probably tried her on that, but they weren't yeah. getting a response, which, I mean, maybe they thought she was just in court or dealing with things. I don't know. I think it's one of those that they just figured it was something not to be concerned about, and you okay. can convince yourself of anything.
Well, now I'm going to find out in Connecticut whether the transport vehicles have radios and what happens if nobody responds, because I feel like there must be.
They definitely, I know procedure. There was a radio. There was definitely a radio in the car, but I don't know any other details. Remember, this isn't a transport. Well, I don't know what you define a transport vehicle. It wasn't the van that the other inmates were brought to. This was
transporting any inmate.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. This is my own personal. Yeah. Just
I mean,
thinking out loud.
You're going to find holes in their policy. So
honey,
that's for sure.
No.
Mm-hmm.
That's the song. Anyways.
I knew that song. I'm pretty decent with songs.
Okay.
It's your movie references I don't do.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Finally, at 3:30, so to your point, this is quite a bit later, yeah. The booking sergeant called her superiors, ultimately going up the chain to Rick. Rick immediately went to the courthouse and searched floor by floor, but it became apparent very quickly that there had been no mental health evaluation scheduled for Casey. And furthermore, he had nothing else that warranted his presence at the courthouse.
Oh, Vicky was in cahoots. Mm-hmm.
They reviewed security footage of the building and confirmed that neither Casey nor Vicky ever arrived there that day.
Damn you, Vicky.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a higher ranking official?
Yeah, she was second in command at the detention center.
Ooh, he got her.
Rick's stomach dropped. His first thought was, because I'll tell you about her in just a second, his first thought was that she was in either extreme danger at best, right, or possibly dead at worst.
100%.
Because she was incredibly well respected, mm-hmm, and very good at her job. They put out a bolo on both Vicky and Casey, noting that they were looking for Vicky's patrol car, expanding it to a national bolo when they realized that Casey had a 6-hour head start at this point.
Yep.
The first tip that came in was from a local police officer who reported that she saw Vicky's patrol car in a shopping plaza when she was on lunch at 11:41 a.m., of course not thinking anything of it at the time. Deputies retrieved the vehicle. In it, they found Casey's handcuffs and leg shackles, as well as Vicky's radio. But beyond that, there was nothing that helped them with Casey and Vicky's whereabouts. Rick also called in the U.S. Marshals Fugitive Task Force. He was not messing around. He was like, we have a problem here. Mm-hmm. And by 5:30 that evening, there were upwards of 20 investigators on the case. Reviewing security footage at LCDC, they observed that Vicky had not been forced or overpowered into the vehicle by Casey. And they began to realize that they were facing a seemingly impossible scenario, that Vicky was actually in on it.
That's crazy.
It's even crazier when you think about when I tell you about Vicky and how well-respected she was. But let me tell you about her. So Vicky Sue Davis was born on August 19th, 1965, to parents Patricia and JC in Center Hill, Alabama, where she grew up and spent her adult life. She went to T.M. Rogers High School, where she met Tommy White. The two married later in life when Vicky was 37. Unfortunately, Tommy had taken to drugs and alcohol, and their marriage only lasted 4 years before they divorced. It was amicable, though. Vicky remained friends with him and his family and kept his last name. But sadly, Tommy passed away in 2022 of complications from Parkinson's. Mm. Just seems like a very cruel,
yeah,
end to his life.
That has to be tough to watch.
Mm-hmm. I think it hit her really hard. She was really close to him still and his family. When she was back on her own, Vicky decided to pursue a new career, choosing to become a corrections deputy with the Lauderdale County Sheriff's Office, working, of course, at LCDC. Mm-hmm. Center Hill is a part of Lauderdale County, so it was special for Vicky to be able to serve the community she had lived in her whole life. This was clear in her dedication. She was named Employee of the Year 4 times between 2015 and 2022. She worked her way up, becoming the Assistant Director overseeing operations, and she became the go-to person at the detention center. She was kind, reliable, trustworthy, and incredibly knowledgeable about how things worked.
Hmm.
How convenient. Everyone involved in looking for Casey was convinced that Vicky could not have been in on it, but as investigators began looking into Vicky's behavior leading up to that day, the facts began to tell a different story. Vicky had put her house up for auction on February 10th, so this all happened at the end of April. On February 10th, she put it up for auction, and she sold it later that month for about half market value. It sold for just under $100,000, which, like, RIP house prices, but it sold for just under $100,000, valued closer to $240,000. She took $65,000 in cash from the sale, and she also sold one of her vehicles. With this newfound cash, she did some shopping. She was seen on video footage shopping for men's clothes at Kohl's, as well as an adult toy store the same week, you know,
okay,
priorities. Yeah. And she went back multiple times to each store trying to avoid looking suspicious.
I am so fascinated by how this went down.
Mm-hmm. She bought an AR-15 rifle and a shotgun, and she was already known to have a handgun. And then on Sunday, April 24th, so the Sunday before all this happened, Vicky went to her office at LCDC and logged into the jail's database, pulling information on several inmates, including Renee Marie Maxwell. On Monday, April 25th, Vicky bought an orange 2007 Ford Edge for just shy of $6,000 in cash, signing her name on the bill of sale as Renee Marie Maxwell.
Why orange, though? That seems very inconspicuous. Yeah.
You mean conspicuous.
Conspicuous.
Yes, and Casey said the same thing. Yes. He was quite angry. Yes.
It's conspicuous, not inconspicuous.
Exactly, yes.
Thank you.
She picked it up the next day and parked it in a row of other cars that were for sale in the parking lot of a shopping plaza. After selling her house, Vicky had moved in with her mother, but Pat said that she had no knowledge of her daughter's activities. Pat said she had last seen Vicky the day before. Vicky came home after work and had supper with her as usual, and then took her dog on a ride. She brought him back home and left. Pat wasn't sure where she'd gone, but Vicky went and stayed in a nearby hotel that night. The last time they spoke on the phone was that morning. Vicky had asked her about her dog, who'd been sick, but nothing seemed amiss. Pat texted Vicky that afternoon to say she'd be cooking them supper that evening, but never got a response. Despite her good relationship with her mother, Vicky hadn't mentioned Casey at all. Hmm. It turns out Vicky and Casey met back in 2020 when he was brought to LCDC for the December 2015 crime spree. When he ultimately went back to Donaldson, the two kept in touch by phone, logging a whopping 949 calls between August 2021 and February 2022. That's a lot.
I just don't think that this would happen in a Connecticut prison, but I could be wrong.
I can't. Okay. So I had the same thought of how could you, because calls are monitored, I assume.
Yeah.
And how would you not notice that it was a corrections officer?
That's what, like, I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, I just don't, if you had that many phone calls, that much time, and I'm pretty sure in Connecticut, you have to have like an approved list of like who can call, I think, yeah. But
and this wasn't like 50 years ago. This was in 2021 into 2022.
But again, I'm sure, like, I've seen enough Locked Up and all that stuff. Like, prisons are run completely differently.
True. This was also during COVID. But, and they were, they did have a skeleton crew. So I just wonder if, I don't know. And it's not, I don't think, this isn't like a high profile jail or anything. You know,
I mean, this is one of those things, though, a skeleton crew, and it's like, yeah, you can't even run the facility. That's how low you are. Yeah. Crazy. Yeah.
I know. Their budding relationship was validated by tips from other inmates who also said that once Casey was back in LCDC, Vicky gave him special privileges. I bet she did. and treated him differently than the other inmates. When he had arrived in February, she assigned him to cell block A1, the first cell block as you enter A Hall. According to A Hall, I hadn't read that part out loud before. According to Rick, this cell is somewhat secluded from the view of other cell blocks, with the inmate property room being directly across from the hall. Therefore, anything going on in cell block A1 was out of view of other inmates.
Gross.
Using her authority and knowledge of the place, Vicky had actually managed to take Casey out of LCDC 2 days before the real escape. They left through the booking room and were gone for 9 minutes and 35 seconds before returning through the service door, bypassing booking and avoiding being seen by other deputies.
So they just figured this out after the fact when they were reviewing the camera footage?
Yep. They had no idea. Yep. Now, perhaps feeling that that approach was too risky, the morning of the escape, Vicky had scheduled transports, because she was director of operations, for other inmates to ensure the other deputies were busy or not there.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Because remember, it's a skeleton crew, so she knew if she got them out and it was minimum, there were like two people, you know?
Wow.
No one could have possibly imagined what she had been planning, but looking back, the signs were there. Vicky had been talking about wanting to retire for months, but on Thursday, April 28th, she suddenly submitted the paperwork and announced her last day would be Friday, April 29th, the next day.
She was like, and I'm out.
Surprise. That was actually what the director of corrections wanted to call her in to his office to discuss. The announcement was so sudden and unexpected that her coworkers rushed to Walmart to get a cake and a card for her last day. They threw her a quick send-off Friday morning, but they said she seemed off. She told them that she wasn't feeling well and left the break room without eating. To be fair, cake at 9 in the morning is a little bit aggressive, so I'm with her on that one.
Do you know what's better? Cake by the ocean.
Weird. That's exactly what my brain just said. I wonder why that... Why did it make that association? Because mine did too.
I don't know.
But in reality, she had been setting the stage to try to buy herself more time in the afternoon before anyone started to look for her by making them think she'd gone to urgent care. By now, we know that she had voluntarily left with Casey, and the two had gone directly to the shopping center parking lot where she'd left the Ford Edge. Investigators reviewed security footage of nearby businesses and first saw Vicky's patrol car pass a gas station on the way to the shopping center. And then from the shopping center, they were able to identify a blurry Vicky near a small SUV, orange or red in color, which we know is the Ford Edge. They at the time didn't. Meanwhile, they had discovered the number for a burner phone while searching a storage unit Vicky had rented. So although it took them a little while to realize that something had gone wrong, once they realized, they were like, everyone, look at this. That evening, they received a ping from it. Though the phone was immediately turned off again, they had a possible location just north of Spring Hill, Tennessee, almost 100 miles away. Which is not actually that far for having, like, at this point, a day almost.
Yeah.
Officers immediately converged on the rural town, but after spending several hours scouring the area, came up short.
I like the way you say rural.
Did I say it? I tried.
You said it.
Rural. Okay, burglary and rural are really hard to say.
They are.
My mouth didn't form correctly. I'm from the Boston area.
My brain heard you say it, so I think you said it okay, but like it just...
Rural. There's too many R's.
Rural.
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 It's one sentence, one syllable. Rural. Okay. So by this time, the media had picked up the story and reported that Vicky's patrol car had been left in that shopping plaza. On Sunday night, someone saw the story and called in a tip that he had seen a... Now I'm
you
not doing
You want to try that again? There's a...
today, Junior. Okay. A suspicious orange SUV amongst other vehicles that were for sale. As we know, it was the 2007 Ford Edge, and he had wanted to inquire about it, but it had no for sale sign or a number. Further, he noticed that it didn't have a license plate and that there was some damage on one of the rear quarter panels. Looking inside the vehicle, I love this nosy guy. Looking inside the vehicle, he observed a duffel bag whose description matched the one that Vicky had with her on that blurry security footage from the day before. Unfortunately, the car had been long gone even by the time police arrived at the parking lot Friday afternoon. Investigators added the description of the SUV to the bolo because at the time that they saw the security footage, they kind of saw it was an orange SUV, but with this guy's information, they now knew what kind of car it was because he was very interested in it.
The camera probably had like 4 pixels.
Oh, even though it's like 2 years ago, it definitely had no pixels. Y'all have any more of those pixels? That was not me saying y'all, just in case you didn't know.
Oh, what is that from?
That's the, what's his name? Dave Chappelle. Not Chris anything. No, I'm sorry. Chris it's Rock. The C. No, but it was the C. I was thinking Chappelle's show. I don't know.
Gotcha.
Okay. Anyway, it's a meme. Y'all got any more that you haven't seen that?
You mean a meme?
Where did I leave off? Okay, so we talked about that they now know the description of the bright orange Ford Edge.
Right.
So they add this to the bolo. It had been marked for law enforcement only, but because they wanted to get a jump on them. But right. A local law enforcement agency mistakenly posted it on their Facebook page, thinking it was for the public. They were trying to be helpful. But by the time they realized it shouldn't have been made available, it had already been shared more than 170 times. So
that's not even that many times.
It's enough.
Mm-hmm. But
because 160 of them were the media, probably.
Yeah.
So this seemed like a frustrating setback. If Vicky and Casey knew that the police were aware what vehicle they were driving, they'd likely ditch it.
Right.
But it turned out to be a blessing in disguise. The next day, Monday, May 2nd, Rick held a press conference to formally put the vehicle description out to the public. At the same time, a warrant was issued for Vicky, charging her with aiding and/or facilitating an escape in the first degree. Days went by with lots of tips pouring in, but nothing panning out. Then, on Friday, May 6th, they received a call from a tow truck driver. He saw the description of the Ford Edge on the news and remembered that he had towed a similar vehicle the previous Friday, April 29th. This probably wouldn't have been so easy had it not been bright orange. Mm-hmm. And a Ford Edge, like, I'm so sorry if any of you drive a Ford Edge, but not a great choice. It's not a great car.
Oh, I think the Ford Edge is fine, but in bright orange is where I question. Yeah. Like, I had a yellow Hyundai mm-hmm. Tiburon that we called the Yellow Submarina. Mm-hmm. My husband had an orange sports car.
Yes.
Sports car.
Mm-hmm.
Like, giant SUV should not be in neon colors, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, I think that's a fair opinion to have.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So this orange Ford Edge had been left at an intersection in College Grove, Tennessee, only 20 miles away from the ping from Vicky's cell phone. Mm-hmm. A local resident called it in because she felt it was a traffic hazard since it was blocking the view at an intersection. It's not like a super, it's like a rural, it's a rural intersection, but still it was, you know, they didn't even pull it off to the side of the road. They just left it. And she wanted it taken care of before that afternoon school bus route came through. The pair had ditched the Ford Edge at the intersection for what seemed like a couple reasons. It wasn't in good shape and was likely having mechanical trouble. But moreover, Casey had been mad at Vicky for picking the bright orange, and I wrote such a conspicuous color.
Yes.
Apparently, they had stopped. This is hysterical. They had stopped at a Dollar General to pick up green spray paint in an attempt to disguise the car, but quickly gave up. And I'm going to show you. I'll post this. It is hysterical. So hopefully you're all looking at the Instagram when you see this.
That was probably like 8 cans of Dollar Seriously. General.
And you know they were General. Like, shit, this is taking forever. It might be easier to just get a new car.
Oh my gosh. Yep.
So yeah, that really, really cracked me up.
It's okay. Like an eighth of the quarter panel.
Literally. Exactly. And also, like, if your reasoning is, okay, we don't want them to notice this car, do you not think that an orange car spray painted poorly with green spray paint is, wouldn't that be even more noticeable? Okay. Anyway. So instead, they ditched the car and they found a blue Ford F-150 for sale by owner and purchased it in cash.
Neon blue?
No, this one was at least like a dime a dozen, blue like a navy pickup truck. Right. Yeah. The seller let them borrow some plates to get them, quote unquote, home.
What?
I know. Listen, this is rural Alabama, actually Tennessee.
They're like, I've got some extra registered plates hanging up in my barn.
I don't think it's that crazy. Like, if you have someone buy a car off of you, it's not that crazy to let them use those plates until they get it home and registered.
The plates were still on the car.
Yeah.
The old plates.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think it's that crazy.
No, but you said borrow some plates, and I was just picturing
the plates.
I was just picturing him handing them 2 plates and be like, here you go. These should get you home.
I mean,
that would be really weird.
Okay. Well, that's not what happened. They were still on the truck.
Okay.
Investigators found and talked to the person who sold them the truck, and he didn't know the license plate number, but he had the VIN. Meanwhile, Vicky and Casey continued north. They made it into Indiana and were staying at a Motel 41, which I feel like I've not heard of that chain.
I have not. I'm still stuck on the. How do you not know the license plate on the vehicle you're selling?
I don't know my license plate number.
You don't?
Not off the top of my head.
You're kidding.
I have a picture of it on my phone.
You're kidding.
Why? I don't know. I don't use it that often. How often do I need my license plate?
What?
Why would I know that?
Why wouldn't you know your own license plate number?
Why do I need it? I know my social security number.
Oh.
I know.
MG.
My phone number.
I guess for court, I do a lot more parking with like meters where I have to like enter my license plate number, but
I literally never have to. And around our, like the Hartford, West Hartford area to go out to dinner, you can just use their little app and it saves all my information. So I don't even have to type it.
Okay. Well then I guess.
You got to get with the times.
I know my husband's license plate number.
This is like somebody saying that you, yes. And this is like somebody saying, oh, I know everybody's phone numbers. And we're like, grandma, it's in your fucking
address
book. Okay,
now wait. All right. Okay. This is going to be, I want everybody that's listening now to go on our Instagram and comment whether or not you know your own license plate number, because I'm pretty sure.
Oh, no. I'm going to win this one.
I think I'm in the majority.
Nope. I know you think you are, but you're not.
Okay. So then it's not weird that the guy didn't know his own license plate number on the vehicle he was selling.
No.
What the fuck?
No. Someone could take my car right now and I'd be like, it's gray.
Oh my gosh.
And then I would reference the picture on my phone.
You'd be like, hang on, wait, I know my license plate number. Wow. Okay.
Uh-huh. Okay. Anyway, now I would like you to comment on the Motel 41.
I am unaware of a Motel 41. Okay. Is that like Motel 6, but just
better?
Way better.
Almost 7 times better. All right. This one was less than a mile away from the Vandenberg County Sheriff's Office. They had actually not checked in. Vicky and Casey had not actually checked in themselves. A man checked in for a 2-week stay. Vicky and Casey had paid him to rent the room for them, which was actually kind of smart. Mm-hmm. The man, Sean Eugene Gardner, 51, was a homeless sex offender, and they paid him $100 in exchange for showing his driver's license and renting the room.
Not bad.
They had actually almost been caught right after checking in. On the night of May 2nd into May 3rd, a police officer was doing a routine check of the parking lots looking for stolen cars and noticed that the plate on their truck didn't match the VIN. But it wasn't marked as stolen because they had legitimately bought it.
Right.
Now, at this point, actually, I'm saying that, and I wonder if they had swapped plates or maybe they did give them, the guy did give him extra plates.
I still feel like something very sketchy went on with those license plates.
I just think they didn't think it was a big deal. They were probably like, oh, I just have to get it home and then get it registered. Can I just borrow? I don't know. I don't think it's that crazy.
Don't you bring license plates when you purchase a vehicle?
Maybe. responsible people probably do. I don't know.
And this was like just a dude selling a truck, right? Yeah. It wasn't like a dealership.
Correct. It was not a dealership.
Okay. Well, you know what? I just don't know about these, the ways that of this world.
That is not how they were caught. So
let's keep it's moving. It's fully irrelevant. Let's really keep it moving.
Well, it's irrelevant to the extent that you don't need to know about the for sale by owner guy, but it is relevant that they like cared about the plates and they knew there was a mismatch.
Okay.
So in fact, we're going to talk about that now. Prior to staying at the motel, they had spent a night sleeping in a Walmart parking lot and they knew they had to address the mismatch of the license plates to the VIN. And that's where they saw their opportunity. Bob McCarty owned a jewelry store across the street from that Walmart. He'd gotten a call in the afternoon on May 3rd from someone who said, "I live here in Evansville. I'm handicapped. My sister's moving from Alabama and we need a car. We were at Walmart. We saw your car. She liked it. And I wanted to buy it for her because she's helping me out with being handicapped." He's like, okay. The Cadillac had belonged to one of Bob's friends. It was his mother's before she'd passed away. And Bob agreed to put it out in front of his store for sale. On Wednesday, May 4th, the man and his sister arrived in the F-150. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you can figure out who that was.
Yep.
Vicky got out wearing large sunglasses and a wig. It's hysterical.
Is there a picture of her?
There is. I didn't. I'll have to dig it out and put it and include it. It's grainy, as you can imagine, but it's pretty funny.
Are there 7 pixels?
There might be 8.
Okay.
Maybe. She paid $9,000 in cash, but Bob wasn't really fazed by the cash transaction because he was used to handling a lot of cash with the, I was trying not to say cash again, but couldn't think of another word, with the jewelry. She signed a handwritten bill of sale, Renee Marie Williams. Not sure why she changed the last name.
Oh. By the way, this is a fun fact about me. Did you know that I worked at an auto auction place and people would pay for the vehicles in like grocery bags full of like crumpled ones. And I'm like,
what?
Where did these come from?
Those have been in someone's underwear.
They were fished out of a G-string.
For sure.
100%.
For sure. But I didn't know. It's amazing. I don't think you guys realize the amount of talking that Marina and I do to each other on a daily basis. And we still discover new things. It's like a really quality relationship.
And actually, I knew you at the time.
Really?
Yeah. We were friends at the time that I worked there.
It rings a vague bell, but that might just be because you're telling me now. And my brain's like, okay, we accept this. Okay, so now in another fortunate twist of fate for Vicky and Casey, Bob had forgotten to take the plates off the car. So one he really didn't mean to.
They're just stacking up these license plates.
Yeah. Yep. So now, although it's funny because those plates, I guess maybe those matched the Cadillac, so they wouldn't use them on the truck. They were going to ditch the truck, right?
Yes.
I'm trying to find logic in these illogical people.
Understood.
Okay. So Casey brought the truck to a local car wash, the kind where you wash it yourself by hand in a bay. He left the window down and the key in it, hoping someone would steal it. The owner of the car wash, James Stenson, noticed the abandoned vehicle, and when it was still there the next day, he investigated. He said, "I walked up to the truck, the windows are down, the doors are unlocked. My first thought is, oh my God, this could be the guy from Alabama. I was kind of afraid he might be passed out, asleep, overdosed, shot."
Right.
"I looked in the truck, nobody's in the truck." I got this from a writing of a news article, but I imagine if it were the interview, he's like, "I looked in the truck, the windows down, doors unlocked. I was wondering what happened. Is he there? It's the guy from Alabama." I don't know why that's how I imagine him. I'm very sorry, James. You're a wonderful man. He called local police to investigate, and an officer showed up, ran the plates, and left without speaking to him. When James called back for an update, James said police told him the car wasn't stolen. So again, because they bought the truck legitimately, nobody reported it as stolen. But James insisted that the police come back and look in the truck themselves. When they did, an officer found a gun lock in the vehicle, but no firearms. Twice now, the F-150 had been looked at, but not reported since it was not marked as stolen. All that changed on Sunday, May 8th, when investigators had gotten the VIN from the man who sold the truck originally and entered it into the National Crime Information Center's database. Immediately, they got on a hit thanks to James's persistence that the police look into the abandoned truck at his car wash.
Yeah, James.
I know. I think he really solved this case. Police called James back and asked to look at security footage. On the video, they recognized Casey, who had made absolutely no effort to disguise himself, leaving the truck in the bay, and Vicky arriving in that black Cadillac to pick him up.
Two black Cadillacs.
Oh, that, yeah. Was that supposed to be Carrie Underwood?
Yes. Driving in a hit parade. I don't think those are the words.
I don't think.
A big parade?
Is that the one where it's like slash the, is that the one where they're arriving at the funeral, the two black Cadillacs arrive?
And yeah, and the slashing the tires, that's a different song.
Well,
the two black Cadillacs at the funeral is a different song from the slashing the tires.
There's a lot of knives. I don't know. Okay. Moving on. The next day, Monday, May 10th, they got another break. An off-duty investigator with the Evansville Police Department spotted the Cadillac parked at the Motel 41. The U.S. Marshals immediately set up surveillance and witnessed Vicky exit the room wearing a wig. Casey followed with crutches for his disguise. Oh, okay. Like, they're like picking the most obvious things for disguise. They're like, okay, they're not, we don't want them to notice ourselves, so let's get a giant clown nose and balloons, and then nobody will pay attention to us. Like, the most obvious things. Anyway, the two got into the Cadillac with Casey driving. Agents began following them, and shortly after, Casey spotted them and took off. A pursuit ensued, and as it approached an inevitable end, Vicky made a 911 call.
Okay.
It does not make any sense to me why she called.
She's like, I've been kidnapped.
But she didn't even talk to the dispatcher. She just called. It was like a butt dial, but not. Because obviously you're not butt dialing 911.
Huh.
She can be heard saying, Casey, airbags are going to go off and kill us. Let's get out and run. We should have stayed in the fucking hotel. Which, facts. But I don't understand why she called. It doesn't make any sense to me.
That's weird.
So marshals rammed the car and the Cadillac flipped over several times in a violent crash. Officers heard a single gunshot. Casey jumped out of the car, apparently uninjured, initially looking like he was going to run. But then maybe seeing just how many cops surrounded him, he raised his hands and surrendered. The first words Casey said were, "Please help my wife. She just shot herself in the head and I didn't do it."
Okay, well, that is very suspicious. That's like when my toddler is like, I didn't do that. And I'm like, you didn't do what?
Yeah.
Yeah. So whatever thing it is, you totally just did it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really, wow. That's fucked up.
It's super fucked up. So indeed, Vicky was gravely injured, but alive. She was extracted from the vehicle with the gun still clutched tightly in her right hand.
Oh.
So lots of question marks here. Yep. She was rushed to the hospital while Casey was handcuffed and extradited back to Alabama, though, of course, not to LCDC for obvious reasons.
Yeah. Huh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The couple appeared to have already burned through most of their cash, with just $29,000 found in their car, as well as several weapons, a wig, of course, and camping equipment. Despite their best efforts at the hospital, Vicky succumbed to her injuries, passing away at 7:06 that evening. Her death was ruled a suicide, and the answers to so many questions died with her. Rick, in his book, went through kind of some scenarios. Like, I think he had a hard time accepting that maybe this, I mean, that is what they ruled it was a suicide, but he was wondering, like, could it have been totally accidental? You know, is it the gun, like, jostled
when it was
a real, I'll post pictures of the car. It was a really pretty violent. It's amazing that Casey got out fine. I mean, he already had the crutches, so
yeah, he was ready to go,
but it's not clear. It doesn't make any sense.
Wow. Well, I don't, for what it's worth, I don't think Vicky would have done very well in prison.
And that's why, I mean, so again, in the book, Rick kind of goes two ways. Mm-hmm. Like, he's like, then again, maybe she just knew it was over and she couldn't handle it. We just don't know why she decided to throw her life away. It was, this all started 3 months after her ex died, but the whole relationship started before that. So I don't know. I don't think the relationship from her side started with an intention to get him out of jail. I suspect that he probably manipulated her. But
I was going to say, inmates can be very manipulative. Mm-hmm. And I remember I think the article is called Downing the Duck.
Mm.
But it's basically, I don't know why it's called that, but
yeah,
maybe it explains it, but puzzle. I haven't read it in a while. But long story short, it's the way that inmates or people who are influencing other people slowly chip away at your defenses and slowly start to test that water until you're at like code blackmail, which mm-hmm. in this case, it wouldn't be blackmail. It was more she was vulnerable mm-hmm. from losing her husband, so he manipulated mm-hmm. her into a relationship.
I think you're right, and I know Rick also mentioned that Vicky had just been in one other relationship. I think she had actually been engaged, and her fiancé died in an accident, like freak accident. So I think she just was... I think maybe looking, it sounds like she was a wonderful woman, incredibly yeah. talented at work and hardworking, and everyone loved her. So I think she was very vulnerable and people trusted her so deeply. Just a couple of quotes actually from people who knew her, from Rick when they first realized Vicky was missing. He said, "If she did this willingly, and all indications are that she did, I guess we're trying to hold on to that last straw of hope that maybe for some reason she was threatened and did this under coercion, but absolutely you'd feel betrayed." And then the Lauderdale County District Attorney, Chris Connolly, who worked with Vicky for almost daily for 17 years, so knew her incredibly well. He actually last spoke to her the day before she disappeared. He said, "I would have trusted her with my life. I'm so disappointed in her. She was trusted and exploited that trust."
Wow.
And the quotes are just, there's a ton more. They're just people who are so betrayed.
Right.
And like just hurt because they couldn't fathom that it was unfathomable. They couldn't fathom that she would do something like this right. for how great she was.
Wow.
Vicky was buried in Lauderdale County on Saturday, May 14th. There were approximately 200 people in attendance, including her family, friends, some coworkers, and even former inmates of LCDC.
Oh, wow.
As for Casey, he was sent back to Donaldson to await trial. In addition to the escape charges, with Vicky's death, he was charged with felony murder. And for those of us not in the know, a felony murder charge indicates that the victim died while the accused was committing another dangerous felony, even if the accused did not intend to kill the victim or cause his or her death.
Yep.
However, the felony murder charge was dropped when Casey surprisingly pleaded guilty to the escape charges in exchange for no prosecution on the felony murder. And I say surprisingly because his own lawyer didn't even know he was going to do that. They struck a deal.
I mean, did it even really matter? He still had 75 years hanging over
exactly.
his head. And
yeah. And according to the DA, Vicky's family were okay with this agreement. Casey actually apologized to Vicky's mother, saying the escape wasn't supposed to end like that and that family was the most important thing to Vicky. But he also said that he had planned to have a shootout with police. And that's why Rick actually thought maybe the gun had like been jostled and all that. And it is horrendous that it ended in Vicky's death. But I think it prevented the death of who knows how many other people
right.
if he had gotten a hold of a gun. And it's a scary thought.
Either that or what if Vicky went to shoot him knowing that he was going to do that?
Oh. Ooh, I didn't think about that.
I'm just thinking, you know, yeah. she stepped over the line, but she wouldn't want to see like Boys in Blue go down.
Definitely
if she
not.
Knew that he wanted to do a shootout. Maybe she went to shoot him. He turned the gun on her while it was still in her hand.
You just blew my mind. Wow.
I gave myself chills.
I don't know. Ooh, it's so sad.
I know.
It's so sad. Okay. So escape in the first degree is a class B felony, which typically results in 2 to 20 years in prison. But given Casey's rap sheet and he was sentenced as a habitual offender, receiving life in prison mm-hmm. with the possibility of parole, although he isn't eligible until 2081. Now, remember, he still hadn't had his trial for Connie's death way back, that original murder I told you about. He has since recanted his confession and pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity.
Sure.
Right. However, in subsequent interviews with authorities, he allegedly gave details about the crime that has not been made public and which only the killer could have known.
Okay. So, yeah.
Yeah. His trial was set for August 2023, but on July 28th, 2023, just a couple of weeks before the trial was set to begin, the DA announced that he was suspending the capital murder prosecution. The reasons he gave were, one, as you said, Casey was already serving a life sentence and wasn't eligible for parole until 2081. Two, the trial would require the expenditure of significant state resources. And lastly, and most interestingly, three, they were continuing to investigate the case, including the potential involvement of other people. And I could not find any more information on that case developing. That was just last year. So... The DA said that Connie's children, Austin and Cameron, were in support of this motion. So in light of all this, authorities also reopened a case involving the death of Christy Shelton, one of Casey's ex-girlfriends.
Oh.
On February 1st, 2008, she died from a shot in the chest from a sawed-off shotgun. At the time, it had been ruled a suicide, but Casey had been in the home at the time of her death, and her family had always been suspicious. As of this recording, I could not find any updates from that whatsoever. So that leads me to believe they hadn't found anything, but who knows?
They figured out that it was death by seatbelt.
I was going to make that joke. Yeah. And I was like, is that okay? I usually make the off-color jokes.
So. I don't know. It felt right in my heart. I'm okay. Sure it's fucked up.
It is. Well, that's what we're here for.
Yes.
Yep. In another suspicious event, Casey's stepbrother, Stephen Patrick White, had gone missing in 2017. He was last seen at a house where he walked away around 4 p.m. into the woods and hadn't been seen since. Stephen's wife contacted police and reported him missing, prompting the Lawrence County Rescue Squad to search his home and surrounding area. Subsequent searches failed to produce any information on Stephen's whereabouts, and although this is certainly concerning, Casey was in prison at the time. So the missing person's case is still open, but they were looking at anything and everything related to him.
So Christy? Yep.
Christy Shelton.
Christy. Mm-hmm. So her death was obviously ruled a murder initially, and it's just unsolved, but they think it was
him. It had been ruled a suicide, but the family didn't believe. I know.
A sawed-off shotgun to the chest?
I think this will be why the family is wondering.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay, that makes my joke even worse. But
I know.
But to me, it would be so obvious that if you were shot in the chest with a shotgun, that is not suicide.
Agreed. And especially considering his December 2015 crime spree started with him stealing firearms and going to a different ex-girlfriend that it did. I feel like that connection would have been made.
I guess logistically you could with a sawed-off shotgun as opposed to like a full barrel, but
it just doesn't seem. No. I think I'm with the family on this one. It's very suspicious. So that's why they reopened it.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But I didn't find any updates.
They reopened it, but it's still open. They don't.
Yeah. Cause they only reopened it in, I think, 2023.
Oh, okay.
So I didn't see anything.
Media, where are you? Get on this.
I know. That's my main source of truth. Since Casey's dramatic escape, Rick made several changes to policy at LCDC.
Okay.
First, as assistant director of operations, Vicky was the only one who received the list of inmates to that would be transported to court.
Yeah, you need more than one person mm-hmm. to have access to that. Yes.
So now the list is sent to the unit sergeant, who has to send it to the transport team as well as the detention center personnel. Second, judges previously would have just had a clerk call the detention center to request an inmate be brought before court. Now that had to be in writing. Mm-hmm. And finally, they looked at addressing overcrowding and staffing issues, the combination of which had created a significant lack of oversight that allowed Vicky and Casey's relationship to blossom. As for Rick himself, he retired at the end of his second term in January 2023 after a career that spanned 5 decades.
Wow.
This story has been made, we talked about this off recording, but this story has been made into a Lifetime movie, Bad Romance.
I want your loving and I want your revenge. You and me could have a bad romance.
The Vicky White story.
those lyrics are almost, it's like misheard lyrics. Like it's close enough.
Lock the cat box. Lock the cat box. Okay. Was that a commercial? Or there was something that, I think it was a commercial. I don't know.
Okay. I like it.
Anyway, that movie came out. It was on Lifetime and came out in October 2023, but I haven't watched it because I read this whole book and did a lot of other research. And besides the fact that it was a Lifetime movie, so I was like, I'm pretty sure I'm not going to get any legitimate information from this. But if y'all watch it.
You'd be like, in the Lifetime movie, Vicky got pregnant with a turkey baster from Casey. It was very accurate. Factually accurate.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah. No. So let me know. Let me know if you read it. So anyway, yeah. Well, if you're like me and you have subtitles on everything you watch on TV, there's a little bit of reading involved.
Okay. See, I'm torn on the subtitle thing because I do appreciate not straining my ears, but I have to read every word when it's on the screen.
Well, me too, but I literally don't know what's going on if the subtitles aren't on. Like when we're watching some things like on TV as opposed to Netflix, it will block. It's like sometimes poorly done and on the news or something. It'll block all the writing on the screen. So we'll turn them off.
It.
Well, we'll turn them off. And then we're like, what happened? What did she say? We're very old.
And this is an aside, speaking of Netflix, I was trying to figure out what to watch last night on Netflix. And my pet peeve is Netflix being like, I'm going to start playing this right now. And I'm like, no, I'm trying to read the description. So I moved to another thing. It's like, let me play this one too. And I'm like, I cannot focus.
I think you can turn that off, actually. Maybe.
Mm-hmm. I'm feeling like a boomer right now.
You are. I'm the one who has to have subtitles. Or I can't watch TV. Yeah,
I just don't want, like, stop talking. It's like when I'm trying to have a conversation with my husband and my toddler's like, mommy, 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 mommy. That is the equivalent of me trying to find something on mm-hmm. Netflix. They're like, we're playing the whole movie while you're reading. Watching
this. Did you like this? Thumbs up if you want more.
I'm like, I haven't decided.
Anyway. If you're enjoying listening to Grimm or reading it, make sure you're getting the most in between episodes. You can find us on Instagram at Grimm Crime Podcast and on Facebook, just search Grimm, a true crime podcast. Or even better, you can subscribe to our Patreon and get this all the time by searching Grimm, a true crime podcast on the Patreon app or website. Depending on which tier you choose, that's like if you choose the rural tier, you'll get a shout out, you'll get bonus episodes, and as I said, you can get access to our Discord server. You can send us an email at grimcrimepodcast@gmail.com, and that's also where you can send us case suggestions. Wherever you do listen, please rate us, or even better, leave a written review. I actually just read one, and I didn't screenshot it because I just
read it. Oh, the one that said they binged?
Yes.
Yes.
So thank you for that. That made my day. Thank you.
We like to be binged.
Yes. We like to binge around here. Thanks for being here, and listen, learn, and stay alive until next time, because the future is grim.